This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Futurology Show. Brett Lindsay, the resident digital philosopher here. We have a different show for you today because for the first time, the Futurology Show will be broadcasting from a stage. We were recently invited to the Icon SA event. It's South Africa's oldest and largest gaming convention. And we were joined on stage by tech girl Sam Wright, who's one of South Africa's top gamers and has in-depth knowledge of the games and the technology behind the games. She's traveled the world and has seen some amazing things, so she's going to be thrilling us with some great stories from her travels. But join us as we take an in-depth look at how technology has been changed by gaming.
This is CliffCentral.com.
And welcome to Futurology, everybody. It's been a great couple of weeks. I must admit, I've been really excited the last couple of days. We've got to spend it at Icon, and we're here right now.
Awesome.
Boys?
Are we live?
We are live.
We're on.
Hey?
They let us out the studio, which is great.
Welcome to the show, bud. Good to see you at Icon.
Yeah, it's a new experience for me, because the last game I played, I think, was Pac-Man in 1980.
See, I'm already saying Pac-Man.
The last game you played was by yourself.
No, it's Pac-Man. I promise you, it's
Brett,
Pac-Man.
Ignore him. How are you, bud?
Yeah, good, man. The last game I played was CSGO, so a little bit more relevant to today. And I tried to play it with some of those like really fast little 10-year-olds in Hong Kong, but they've got way faster speeds online, and I got headshots every 10 seconds. Every time I refragged, I was dead as quick as I spawned, so it was awesome. But yeah, that's as close as I can get to gaming. The rest of it's about time. I don't really have the time I wish I had to play games.
So guys, it's great to have all of us, not in studio, but actually at Icon.
Let us out. Thank you.
Fantastic.
I hope everybody can hear us. There's a lot of noise here, but I think it'll be fine, right?
It's a busy event, 25 years in, and it's still so popular, which is great. It's great to see people getting dressed up. The cosplay is amazing.
Yeah, it's a cosplay judging today, I believe.
Oh, cool. And it's 25 years old. I mean, that is great to have an event like this in South Africa that's 25 years old. It's wild to see that phenomenal type of culture exists.
So on that note, if you're listening, please go follow us on at Futurology Show. Please, when you go to the iPod, iTunes Store, and
iTunes
all
Store,
the different podcasting platforms, please give us a 5-star rating, guys. We're really looking forward to your feedback on the show. And let's get into it. So today I'm really excited. We've got a tech girl with us, right? Sam Wright's on the show with us. She's an absolute gaming freak. Is that a good name to say?
It's a fair name to say, I think. Yeah, I'm a little bit gaming obsessed. I don't
gaming
even laugh.
Obsessed, of course. So Sam, thank you very much for being on the show with us today. We're extremely excited to have you on the show. Give us a little bit of background. Like, what are you interested in? Why are you such a gamer?
I don't know why I'm such a gamer. Like I said, I think I just don't have a life. I don't like people. I prefer being at home online. Not really. I am a blogger, content creator.
Love your blog, by the way. It's fantastic.
What's your blog?
Tech Girl.
Tech Girl.
Are you that Sam?
I'm that Sam.
Jeez.
Surprise.
Welcome to the party, Mike.
I do think that maybe I should have thought of a better name, because I turned 30 like 2 weeks ago, and my mom was like, you can't be Tech Girl if you're 30. And I was like, thanks, Mom. I love you too. So that's got to change.
So blogger. Happy birthday for 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, thank you. 30.
Did you have a good party?
No. I think I played some Lego City Undercover, which is a 12-year-old's game, and then went too big.
You're feeling your age.
I was feeling my age just a little bit, but started the blog, content creation, started YouTube. I'm really passionate about esports, so started doing some esports hosting. I think basically I just had absolutely no cooking clue what to do with my life. So just tried a bunch of stuff and it seemed to work out. Throw stuff at a wall and see what sticks, type of thing.
But you get to travel around the world a lot now, don't you?
So I was in Taiwan 2 weeks ago for Computex, which was mind-blowing and like possibly one of the coolest experiences I've ever had. Just being in that space with that much technology and just so many people and getting to see everything launched and get to go play with it right there and then, that was pretty rad. So
what were the kind of key highlights that you saw there? What really impressed you? Because I mean, like, for me, I guess these are Apple boys. I get more excited about the Google launches, and they more stuck around the Apple launches. So what was exciting there?
So it's a bit strange for me because I have a MacBook that I edit all my videos on because I can't use Premiere Pro at all. So iMovie is my favorite. So I'm in the Apple, I'm in that ecosystem and I love it, but then I'm like conflicted because I'm on the other side. So it's always a little bit tough for me. I jump between the two.
Balance is good. So.
I just want all the things.
Yeah.
But for me, Computex, what was amazing, funny enough, is not Computex itself, but it was actually because one of the things was getting to go around Taiwan where you have this incredible gaming culture and going to a mall, which is exactly like our shopping centers, except it's just tech brands. But it's so different to what we have. So it's not, if you go, if you come here to a store, I won't mention brands because I'll probably be in trouble, but you'll go into a brand store.
You can mention brands.
Okay, so think about it.
You can be good and you can be bad as well.
Go into an iStore and it's cool. You've got all your little MacBooks there and you can go and you can look at them. That's it. And maybe you go into a store that sells a PlayStation and you can see it in the box over there, but that's it. Yeah. Whereas these stores, I mean, they had MSI, Asus, Razer, they have these different areas which are stores selling the stuff.
Yeah.
And when you walk in, there's no boxes of stuff. It's literally, the Razer thing was, as you walk in, they've got some products on the side and then they've just got tables where kids can come
display,
and
right?
You display.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had a three-screen Razer that was stolen from the CES show.
I haven't heard about that one actually. You're going to tell me now.
The first time, so Razer came out with this three-screen laptop. Yeah, it was amazing. It lasted 2 days on the CES show this year at Vegas.
No.
And somebody nicked it from the stand.
How did they get it out? That's amazing.
Great question. And now all of a sudden they're really like knockoffs of this Razer thing. I'm like, okay.
It's
not the guy that made the knockoff. He stole the
thing.
But they are great.
They had that store. MSI had an experience store where you could go. And it was just about playing on the stuff, which I thought was completely different to what we have here, where it's like, look at this cool thing that we'll show you, but you can't have it and you can't touch it. This was like, just come and play on it and get an experience.
Were they prototypes? Were they like allowing people to play with like newer than new stuff?
So that they do at Computex itself, so you can pitch up. So they would launch gaming notebooks, they would launch new tech, and it would be there, and you could literally just go and start playing on it. They'd have guys that they had quite a few streamers from around the world who were on the stand just streaming. So you could get like hands on with it, which I loved. And then the one thing that I also loved is in these malls as well, they have these VR rooms, and you can go and play virtual reality games. So it's pretty
just
much
freely accessible. Anyone plug
you
in.
You have to pay an entrance fee for that. Yeah. But like they had this one game, so I'm absolutely terrified of heights, and it's a room. And what they had is they had cushions on either side and a plank. And you stand on the other side, you put these ridiculous shoes on, they look like Crocs. And you put the shoes on and you put the VR headset on. And the moment you put the VR headset on, you're in this incredible space. It looks like you're on a cliff and you have to walk across this, like, it's almost like a steel
plank.
Please
tell me somebody took a video of you doing that.
Oh, I got it. I look like someone described it as a toddler learning to walk. But what they didn't tell you, and this is what I thought was quite cool, because you don't get to go in the room and watch other people do it. They let me video, but when you're in there, they don't tell you, because you start walking on this plank, and if you turn behind with the VR, you can see these zombies chasing you. So now you know you have to get off the plank. When you look down, it looks like you're going to drop, and there's these dragons flying around. And as the dragons get closer, the plank starts rocking.
No.
So all they do is, and they are literally moving it so little, you can't fall off.
Yeah, yeah.
But because you're in the space, freaking out, and I'm terrified of heights. And also, I kept looking down, and the woman helping me went, don't look down. I'm like, it's VR. Like, the whole reason I'm here is to look down. She was like, don't look down, walk across the plank, walk across the plank.
I've become my fear of heights,
I was like, why would I wear this and not look down? And then eventually,
were you mumbling to yourself, it's not real, it's not real, it's not real?
The thing is, the rocking, you're telling yourself that, and it obviously you know you're in the space, it's not, but the rocking of that plank just, and you know you're not, your brain is going, they can't rock this that you'll fall off, you're not going to fall off, but your head is still going, you're going to fall off and die. It's incredible. And then eventually you get to jump on the dragon, which I never did. I was like, nah, screw that, took the headset off. I was like, I'm done, I ain't jumping on anything.
But it's seriously cool. I mean, gaming's come a long way since Pac-Man, hey?
Pac-Man.
Now, Mike, listen, are we going to rag you for the rest of your life on this one?
Yeah, you are.
Is that really the last game you played?
No, it's not.
It was Candy Crush,
Mickey Mouse Brothers?
No, I can't get into those things. I did play threes. I've taken all the games off my phone because I spend too much time sitting on the toilet. You know, it's just too distracting. But
I'm just wondering if these were games. I don't think they were games, Mike.
Did your mother never teach you that if you had nothing good to say, don't say anything?
Listen, this conversation's getting a bit shitty, but let's move on. So the kids obviously play Xbox, so I do a bit of exercise with them, playing the
exercise.
So it's justification to my wife why we're allowed to play. You know, the boys are allowed to play. So,
but you guys, I've been thinking we've actually jumped straight into the future, right?
Yeah, I was about to say.
Like, right into the deep end of...
So we're going to jump forward, we'll come back, and we can...
And then we'll kind of get lost somewhere in between, right?
Space-time is irrelevant.
Fantastic.
So, I mean, the theme of today's show is really about the impact that gaming has had on technology, right?
Yeah, totally.
And I have to admit, I'm a bit naive. I always thought it was pornography. But that has gone far further with the gaming world than anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, we were just talking about the broadcasting technology.
Easy.
And then the programming languages, what's happening there, is all derived from the gaming
True
community,
story.
Right?
I mean, these gaming engines are now more powerful than any computer character gen that ever existed in broadcast. Yeah. So for 20 years, these broadcasters have been using character gen, made by some legacy proprietary guy somewhere. Thought, oh, this would be a great idea. I can put somebody's name underneath them on the newsreel. But now we're using Unity and we're using Unreal gaming engines in broadcast space, and they've literally just leapfrogged all these guys and been like, you know, we can do this better. And a lot of the big broadcast guys out there have said, well, we see that. So all the virtual sets you see now, all being used on Unreal Engine. A lot of the game mechanics in these game shows, all using Unity on the back end for this real-time graphics that's happening, and that's affecting broadcast. So everybody's like, oh, cool, gaming is getting so popular that it needs its own broadcast, ESL and all these other esports programs. But broadcast, traditional broadcast, actually accepting so much more of the technology made available to it because of gaming. And that's wild to see. I mean, that's just going to, you've got now other sectors of the industry forging forward with advancing the technology.
I think that that's what's so cool about gaming, that when I was driving, I had a conversation with a friend of mine in the car, and we were saying that it's really about gamers want that experience. They want it to be as real as possible, as good. Like, and it comes down to that quality as well. They want this authentic experience. They want it to be real. And because of that, the quality of technology that's developed specifically for gaming is just so much better.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that everyone else will come in and go, okay, let's go and hop off that.
You've nailed it in the head, because we were talking about Mary Meeker's report a couple of weeks ago, and we've watched the GPU processing power go from 5 GPLOPS to now literally 12 years, 13 years later, we're sitting at 10,000 GFLOPS that are required to, say, run Paragon. I mean, that's crazy, the amount of processing power that's being thrown behind these kind of games to ensure that reality, right?
But also, I don't even really want to run the game. I also want to be able to chat to all my friends while I'm doing it. And I want to film myself. Yeah. And I want to be broadcasting that up to the internet so
into
everyone
internet.
Can see what I'm doing.
YouTube it.
So the bandwidth and the processing.
The amount of work that has to go into it. So they obviously got to develop these machines more and more and more to make sure that, because I want to do all the things at the same time in one go on one machine.
Low latency, no latency.
No, no time for that.
Yeah.
What is latency? Kidding.
It's the reply time, the response time to something happening.
I saw one of the coolest t-shirts. Someone showed me it was a little buffer, and I can't remember what the tagline was. Damn it, now I've forgotten. Anyway, pass.
Jeez.
I've seen lots of cool t-shirts today, by the way.
So, some just down-to-earth questions. What console do you play with at home?
Oh, PS4.
PS4?
So I've got a PS4 and a Nintendo Switch. I have an Xbox One. I don't have an Xbox One. My housemate has an Xbox One, but it's in the cupboard because sometimes our mom...
Because you had a shelf and there was some space and
and also like our moms come around and then they comment about it. Like we're both, you know, a little bit older females just playing video games by ourselves. Like they have the stereotype of a gamer is this overweight guy sitting in a basement eating pizza, but it's actually not the case. It's my housemate and I eating pizza in our lounge, playing like 7 different consoles. Or she'll sit in the lounge and play one, and I'll sit in my bedroom and play another, and then we'll play against each other. But we're in the same house. It's confusing.
It's not really, because I mean, if you actually look at Mary Meeker's report, and she really presents this, the internet trends, and it's like the penultimate report every year. And gaming came in, and the shift in understanding the demographic is massive. Certainly the woman gamer, the female gamer coming through is a far more stronger player, and it's a lot more relevant. As you say, it's not like sitting in the basement overweight.
Well, I also think
shape to for 3 days.
You mentioned about sitting on the toilet on your phone, but do you know how many moms I see at, like, because I hang around randomly at school playgrounds, but you know how many moms
is this
I see?
Yes,
I'm feeding every stereotype.
There's no gender bias against girls sitting around.
I've seen so many moms when they're like waiting for their kids, or like some of my friends who have smaller kids and have to go and do weird parenting things. They'll be sitting there and they sit on their phone playing games, and I think mobile gaming is just getting bigger and bigger because for them, the Candy Crushers of the world are actually the time wasters that they need while little Billy finishes his swimming or whatever
it's
else.
Filling so, moments.
Yeah, exactly.
It's filling the moments.
Exactly. And
absolutely.
I mean, the mind-numbingly boring stuff that you can play on your phone that actually the whole time you're playing, you're going, this is ridiculously bad, Flappy Birds. It's so bad for me and this is so dumb. But it's just that time waster that for some reason you just want to keep doing.
But I think it's also the quality of their games, because if I look at my kids, you know, they've got the TV, they've got the laptop. They love playing the games on the iPad, you know, and it's actually where they go and play their games, you know, as opposed to using the Xbox more than they go and sit on the. But it's the quality of the experience that's coming through.
I don't play on my phone because I just don't have enough battery life to get through the day. But I got a Nintendo Switch recently, which is the mobile console. And I love that thing. Like, it goes everywhere with me because it's fun and you can sit on there and you can play it. And yeah. A lot of the games are not... I mean, I know there's Zelda and there's a far more intricate ones, but I really just like Street Fighter. 5 minutes, I can just go and kick someone in the head for a bit, and I'm like, yeah, I feel better, off I go, you know? Or Super Mario, I'll just drive a little cart around, and for some reason that makes me quite happy. So I think the iPad makes sense to me as well, because it's the same sort of principle. It's the quick fix. Whereas if I sit down in front of a PS4 and I'm going to play a game, I'm probably going to invest three, four hours into this.
And your phone's generally secondary to any other experience that you're having while you're gaming. Everything else turns off. It's game
exactly,
time.
Exactly.
Now, when you're playing your Super Mario Kart or something, and you are you playing for the enjoyment of gaming, or are you actually out to accomplish something? Like, are you level focused?
No, because I suck. I'm really bad at video games.
So I'm going to play this because it's fun.
But my problem is that I'm super competitive by nature.
Yeah.
So if I play something, I want to win, and then I suck at it, and then I can't win, and then I rage quit. But by rage quit, I mean I'll stand up, and I'll scream and shout, and I'll walk off, but then I'll be back in 5 minutes being like, oh, I'm going to do this. So yeah, for me, though, I like the competitive side, but I'm not, from a gaming point of view, I'm not good at it. But I'm really invested in competitive gaming because I like to watch it. Yeah. I like competition in general, so I like watching the intricacies of how it works when you watch CSGO and understanding the dynamics, because when I play CSGO, I'm terrible. Like, I just run in, shoot, first person killed, the worst entry frag in the world because I don't hit a single person, but I get killed. But I'm like excited because I just want to run in and shoot people.
I have a group of mates who play online, and we all, it's knife fight. There's no guns. It's all knife fights. You literally got to run around and just like maim everybody.
That's so much fun.
Like,
funny enough, I was talking, there was some of the esports guys from a new MGO we had yesterday, and there's a little kid called Massacre. He's like 16. So he's probably one of the best CSGO players in the country. His favorite thing in the world is when he plays like a training match with other teams. So they'll go online. It's like a Thursday night. Most of these guys, Massacre's in high school, but most of these other guys are like 24, 25, they're computer programmers, attorneys, investment bankers. These are busy men. They've got to come in, they've got to play their game, they want to train with their team, and then they want to go off and have their life.
Yeah.
So the knife round is always the quick one. We do the knife round, we'll get it over with. Not Massacre. He runs around the map, and then on TeamSpeak, we'll just be going, come catch me, and laugh his head off. So now they've all refused to play with him. But I mean, that's his favorite thing. And then yesterday when he was here, I actually asked him about it for the first time. I was like, Massacre, you know you really piss people off. And his response was, I know, and it's funny.
Have you seen things change over the years in terms of like society, community, I think is a better word.
Yeah.
You're playing with your housemate. I mean, you guys you've got your chips and your drinks, and you've got like a whole night planned, and you're going to be doing. So, but you're not LAN gaming. You're not going online to play with everybody else. It's head to head. Have you seen a change in dynamic in how people used to play, like LAN parties? You used to get a group of guys together versus this global community that now exists, where you are playing Russia and Argentina and everybody all together. Well, maybe not Argentina, but Hong Kong at least, and they have the guys with fast broadband. They're all on edge.
I think what's really great though, I think we'll see it more and more. And I mean, the whole conversation about how gaming impacts technology. Like, I think you're going to see this start happening. I've found as time has gone on, things like TeamSpeak, the fact that you can get stuff done with anyone in the world, you can be playing a game and you can be chatting to your teammates and off you can go. You're already seeing it, like it's in the most like basic way filtered down into work. Like, I find people are less inclined to have meetings now. They're like, okay, cool, let's just Skype calls. I was like, that originated because we all as gamers figured out that we actually don't need to sit in a room with you and talk to you. Like, we can do this. I mean, that's the most basic of it. But I find that more and more that it happens online. So we'll be like, cool, Tuesday night. I mean, I know, for example, last night I have some YouTuber friends that I work with and that we game, and they were all sending messages. It was like 9 o'clock on a Saturday night. do you guys want to hang out? And by hang out, they literally meant they were all going to go play Battlefield together. So one lives in PE, the other one lives down the road from me, and then someone else is like in Ramberg. Their definition of hanging out on a Saturday night is to play Battlefield and just chat to each other. And then, like, I was watching the WhatsApp conversation where the one guy was like, cool, I'm just going to go grab a beer. And they're talking as if they're sitting in a bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're actually just, they're never leaving their house. So they never actually see each other. But they're having a cool Saturday night all together.
It's to be in different universes, literally.
And that's the thing. And it is. It's a great way to bring people together because it's fun. And, like, you meet so many. I know there's lots of talk about the dodgy environment of gaming online, but you just get to meet so many cool people.
Awesome. For me, it's a great example of Mixit, right? So Mixit evolved from that gameplay environment. Everyone loved the chat ecosystem, and they just 100%. Kept on building out the chat ecosystem and dropped off the gameplay. Well, I think the gameplay still existed, you know, in one of the rooms.
Yeah, I think so. But I think to take your point further, you know, the gamification has had a huge impact on, or gaming has had a huge impact on technology.
Oh, yeah.
But if we look at this from a psychological point of view, in terms of human motivation and what you're saying, the ability to enjoy yourselves, you know, on a Saturday night, as though you're sitting in the same room, and you look at where business is actually going. It's all about gamification, actually. You know, it's this underlying motivation. How do we create these incredible experiences? It's your experience in Taiwan.
No, it's because they're all executives. They're young. Executive. Damn it, I'm only having fun when I'm playing games. Yeah, Let's bring it into the workspace.
Bring it into the workspace. And if you look at the world of education, which is supported by Mary Meeker's stuff, you know, and I mean, it's the world I come out of, is the education and communication. Gaming is having a huge impact on how people actually perform in work and do their day-to-day job. If you turn it into a game, it's cool. It's fun. It's exciting.
Well, I think that gaming is fun. I mean, that's the bottom line. Why do you play games? It's fun.
It's fun.
It's entertaining. Whether you're competitive and you suck or you just, it's fun. And when you're having fun, you're going to invest far more time in it. I can spend, I think Injustice 2 came out and I got this thing that I just wanted to finish the story and I wanted to finish it now. So it was like 4 or 5 hours a day of just playing Injustice 2, completely ingrained in it without even realizing how much time it was taking up. And when you enjoy something, you put more time into it. And from a workspace, it makes sense. Make it, and even education, make it fun, make it a game. People are going to put more time into it, and then they're more likely to actually learn.
Absolutely. If you take a look at business today, I mean, like, well, not business today, but business maybe 5, 10 years ago, you kind of stuck with your KPIs in front of you, your indicators that you have to achieve.
Which is a leaderboard.
It is now a leaderboard, but back a couple of years ago, you're literally in this day-to-day grind, and you're working to an end goal that you don't know. When you look at gaming, we know that there is an end goal. We know what the end state is. This is the win state of this game. I am here. I need to get there. And they've started incorporating that into business. This is the goal. Let's get to the goal. And showing people how far they are in the progress to attaining that goal, it actually starts ramping up productivity because people are more inclined to say, well, actually, we're achieving something. I'm not coming into work from 9 to 5 and sitting there going, what the hell am I doing here? There's actually this game state in play in business saying, and it's encouraging employees to actually be more productive. But what I found as well is, like, we've got a couple of gamers that we've employed, and we employed them because they actually put, I am a gamer, on their CV. And it's amazing because they've got collaborative thinking, they've got critical thinking, they can problem solve.
They know how to innovate and iterate because they've been in this constant cycle of try, fail, try again, try, fail, try again, try,
and
fail,
businesses,
try again.
Exactly. Repetition. Learn and learn and learn. Yeah. Failure is okay.
Yeah.
But you've got businesses have got to start adapting to encouraging this type of mentality within the workspace. Gamers are going out there saying, oh, I'm a gamer, I want to be a professional gamer. But not everybody realistically is going to be a professional gamer. Just like no one's going to be a professional golfer or rugby player. But you can still make a living.
Or podcaster.
Or podcaster, This might be my last one.
Just keep throwing the same, all our career paths.
But there's got to be something where you can make money doing what you love. And if there's an opportunity where you're pulling some of that game mechanic into workplaces, it's phenomenal. What are your thoughts on that? Sorry.
I completely agree with you. And
sorry,
I also,
Sam, he tends not to ask questions.
I don't ask questions.
He makes a statement.
Just wait for me to answer. I agree with you completely. I also, it's like you said, I think everyone... The fact that you mentioned that, though, putting I'm a gamer on your CV, I mean, you wouldn't have done that 3 years ago. You wouldn't have dared. The moment you say, oh, well, like, what do you do as a hobby? I game. Oh, well, you're antisocial. You won't be good in the workplace. Now it's, okay, cool. This is someone that we actually need to hire because they're likely playing online, interacting, like you said, the problem solving. So I think that that's the first step. But I also think that is an interesting one as well from a career point of view where you said you can't be, like, not everyone's going to be a professional gamer. But it is actually probably a benefit for you in any chosen field because you've got that critical thinking, you understand problem solving,
yeah.
you've You've had to deal with a multitude of different people in situations, high pressure situations. So all of those benefits are there. And I can imagine that more progressive companies are actively seeking that out.
Yeah.
Sure. So on that note, we're kind of reaching a midpoint. And if you just joined us and you're listening to the show, it is the Futurology on Cliff Central. And today we are talking about the impact of technology in the gaming environment. We've got Sam Wright in the studio with us today, and the studio is actually at Icon, and it's been absolutely fabulous. Yeah. We've got to see the most incredible gaming environment. The cosplay judges are here today, and we're really excited.
I saw the Master of the Universe earlier.
Master of the Universe. Oh, yeah,
and the kit car is here. Michael Knight's car is here.
And it actually works, you know that.
You can actually start it up and drive,
apparently.
I heard it works. Apparently, you can also rent. There's the Ghostbusters van is here. You can rent that. So I was like, obviously, there's my weekend planned. Like.
So when there's something strange in your neighborhood, who are you going to call?
So we've been talking about problem solving, critical thinking. It kind of starts tapping on a discussion that we always get into, which is artificial intelligence. And I think the gaming community has been really good at trying to understand that balance between challenge and ability. As I check my notes. But trying to find that balance, because if it's not challenging enough, you're going to get bored, right? 100%. Especially the more ability you have in the game, but and vice versa, if you have too much of a challenge, the anxiety levels go through the roof. So all these gaming businesses are starting to use artificial intelligence to try and figure out that optimal path to keep you growing as far as you can. I mean, do you see that kind of evolving in the gaming and esports space, I suppose? You know?
Less so from a gaming point of view, and more so from a, I find it interesting because a lot of the companies that, because when I do my actual job, a lot of the companies that I've worked for have actively seeked out AI as something to tie into their business. Sometimes for no reason other than the fact that they just want to be able to say that they've got it.
Yeah, we're doing AI.
Yes, we're doing AI. But a lot of the times it's just for simple tasks that actually, that I find that it just makes the whole process so much quicker and easier. And it's an interesting route that we're going. And I know that the naysayers would say stuff like, oh, well, AI is about to replace, you know, this is going to replace your job. But a lot of the time it's not there to replace. It just simply makes it better. It allows you to be better at what you do.
If you look at machine learning element, right? It's kicking in there. Vast amounts of data crunching it through. Yeah. Sorry, Brett.
No, it's fine. But gaming is sort of teaching us how to become the society of the future. We're already starting this interaction with AI in how gaming works. We've got this link from the physical world into the game space and the virtual space. And AI is going to come out of gaming just like everything else came out of gaming. But it's fundamentally going to change the way in which we live in the next 10 to 20 years.
Yeah.
So
will
there
be corporate politics as a game?
Let's hope not. Well, let's hope they've actually put a definitive win state on that thing. That'd be great. So people like Trump don't get in. Come on. Okay, politics aside. But yeah, what do you think? Let's really throw forward to the future. I mean, we're on the Futurology show.
I think
like,
we're there.
Next 10 minutes, let's talk about the next 10 years. Where do you see gaming as gaming going? And how do you see gaming affecting where we're going as society?
So I saw something really interesting on, I think it was ESL, one of the international broadcasts, I think. I might be wrong, it might have been Starladder. But one of the things that you could now do is that if you had a VR headset at home, you could download this app. There was a program that was running. Download this app, put the VR headset on, and while someone was playing, so I'm a CSGO fan, so I keep going back to CSGO, but while your two favorite teams were playing CSGO, so maybe you had Na'Vi versus Virtus Pro or whoever else, you put this VR headset on, you download the app and you can step into the map.
As an invisible bot.
As an invisible bot. So you would be in VR and you would literally just be able to be standing next to these players, walking around, moving around in the game itself. This is a new thing that's just been rolled out by a company. I think it costs like $150,000 to activate it on your events. But it was amazing.
So in-game spectators.
In-game spectators, walking around with your favorite player.
YouTube, watch out.
I'm sitting here, I'm looking at you, you're shooting someone. You are Pasha Biceps and I'm watching you shoot someone. And it was, you could get it on your Samsung Galaxy S8, the S7 I think. So long as there was a VR capability, you banged it in your headset, off you
dream,
went.
Dream wave.
What's that going to do to game processing?
Yeah. And this was, I think that this is the future. I think we're going to find ourselves getting more into the game and being part of it, whether as a spectator, because some people don't like playing. Some people want to watch, and that's okay as well. So maybe you want to watch your kids, or maybe I like watching CS. I'm not very good at playing it, so I want to be able to be in that that area, stand there, see what the thought process is. And I think that that's the next step from a gaming point of view. Is it's going to be less about playing a game and more being about immersed and being in the game and being part of the game.
And
like
you can
that.
Learn from it as well. I mean, that's about gamers watching what they play, watching other people that are better than them doing it.
Get some training
level.
Tips, and you could have a coach who steps in and says, "Just watch how they're kind of swinging or strategically placing their troops, whatever." You know.
I also think from an
you're kind of getting tips in there.
And from an education point of view, think about the benefits here, because I watch. So someone said to me the other day, I think it was about blogging. They were like, "Well, how do you know how to set up a blog?" I was like, "I don't know. Just learn it on YouTube." Because as far as I'm concerned, anything you want to learn in the world, you learn
YouTube,
it on YouTube. There was a gent who
even how to divide. I had to teach my kids how to divide
on YouTube. You know, there YouTube. We go. There's a guy from Africa who was at the YouTube Creators Awards last year who taught himself. His dream was to conduct music. And he lived in a rural area, but he had a phone. So he watched a YouTube tutorial for 3 months and practiced. And he conducts an orchestra somewhere in the States. Mm. They flew him out. He learnt on YouTube. I mean, there it is. So I think that what we'll start seeing is that concept of you can learn this is on YouTube is now going to be, you're going to step into this reality. You're going to be standing next to someone, because I find it so much easier for me to see someone do something, to learn from them. And they'll show you. In that space where you can interact with it. And I do think that that idea from gaming of interacting and being in that immersive space, we're going to see that filter into education, filter into to business training.
Absolutely.
No, for sure.
I mean, I think throwing it forward also, I mean, thinking about the e-gaming community, and you're really plugged in internationally. Where do you see it going in SA, right? Are you starting to see the big sponsors plugging in? Is it going to start getting the traction that it really deserves?
Oh, controversial topic. Okay, so I'll give you my actual... So we're seeing, I think in the last year, the last like 3 months, 1 million rand tournament, 1 million rand tournament, 1.7 million rand tournament,
Telkom,
all these guys,
BCX,
everyone's coming in, Samsung came in, then this one came in with more money, and this one came in with more money, and that's great. There's lots of money in esports, and that's very exciting for the players who I love dearly. I'm attached to most of them. I'm in that community, and I want them to succeed, but I don't think it's translating to views on the screen. I don't think we're seeing the audiences. So overseas...
So you're looking for the South African audience, right?
The South African audience.
You've got to build their media proposition so they get their brand exposure.
Because overseas, they fill... So the overseas esports internationally is the only sporting event that is more viewed than esports events is the Super Bowl.
Sure.
It outperforms the FIFA World Cup. It outperforms... Sure. Well, and the prize money is ginormous
as
well.
The League of Legends final, apparently there were 20,000 people at the stadium. And there were 43 million people watching online. Oh.
Exactly. And they sell out cinemas. So if you go to Germany and there's a big competition and you can't get into the stadium, you can go to the cinemas. And they're selling out cinemas. And then there's guys watching at home. And the audiences are extreme. We don't have
Do you
the
think
audience.
That's a disconnect, though, between traditional broadcasters trying to get into the esports space, but trying to do it in
and
a traditional
a community
way?
First.
The way that they know how to do it. Yeah, they got to build community first. But there is a community here.
Yeah.
They're just trying to do it in a way that's very traditional in terms of TV broadcast.
There's 150,000 South African users on Twitch.
Sure.
So that's a good on Twitch. So registered on Twitch, 150,000 active users who are watching something. Mm. What does most people watch on Twitch? Esports, gaming.
Yeah.
So they're watching something. They're not watching South African esports. I don't know why. I don't know if it's. I don't think it's production anymore, because I think the organizations have come in this year and the production level's on point. The broadcast is on point. But they just don't seem to be pulling the audience. I don't know why. I don't know if it's just an awareness thing. It could be that maybe the level...
I think it's an awareness thing. Think about like how much... I just think from my own kids and the discussion is the community is small and that community's got to stretch its legs out. And when mobile devices are doing it for it, we're not seeing the local South African community literally stretch... Like these kind of events like Icon, this is great, right? We're starting to stretch it more. But it should be even bigger, right? I think we should go to the next level. But it's difficult building communities.
But is it the quality of gaming in South Africa? I mean, is that the issue?
No, I think that the level is up there, and I think the players are good. I think that the problem that we have in South Africa, and again, controversial, I'll get into trouble for saying this later, is when I watch overseas, I'm invested in players because I know their stories. SK Gaming was a group of boys who were in Brazil. They put all their money together. They moved into a one-bedroom house in the States. They videoed the whole process. They streamed every day. They all slept on mattresses on the floor. Cool. And they were, cool. I'm an American. I'm going to make it big. And people love, they're now one of the best teams in the world. People love them. People love them because they knew their story. They were invested in that story. The personalities are very clear. Pasha Biceps is like one of my favorite people to watch online. He's so funny and he's such a nice guy. And Pasha Biceps, because he's this big built guy and he makes jokes about it. And I think that the problem here is maybe the community. For so long, gamers, and this is an international thing, but it more so here, like something like this was weird to the general public. This is strange. You're nerdy. That's not my thing. And gaming is, oh, you know, you're antisocial and you're a nerd. Like, and I think that it's anything here, whether it be cosplay or gaming or board games, you're a nerd. And the problem is because of that, as a community, we've closed ourselves off because we're so used to being mocked or made to feel inferior because of something we're interested in that it's easier just to stay away from it. And the problem is now, in order to get the general public involved, we're going to have to stand up and be like, come and join us. And you don't want to because you're used to this sort of negative feedback. So I don't know if that's the problem. We haven't told the stories. I mean, I told you that story of Massacre, and that's just a little story, but straight away you know his personality. He's this cool character and you want to meet him and he's funny and you want to hang out with him, but you don't know that if I don't tell you. And I think that that's we have to tell more stories and share more of that with the general public. How we do that, I don't know, because I don't think esports transitions to general broadcast.
I think the stories is the biggest thing. Everything's about experience. Everything's got to be worth sharing. And I think we're moving into this age of the story again. I think stories becoming the epitome of everything we do. One of the first shows I was a part of on Cliff Central was we actually had Red Eye, Paul Challender, the shoutcaster. Yes. We had him on with us. And that was going crazy. I mean, he literally shoutcasted the entire interview with us. And it was like, well, this is different.
He's the cool, isn't he the raddest
He is.
Human?
He's like, and he just got stabbed in the neck. Oh, my God. It's like, but he takes it to a whole other level. It's not just like, you're not just watching a game. You're actually living it with this guy. And it's like, he's telling a story about the game. You're not just watching or just spectating. It's like, wow, this is really something.
Yeah.
And I think when you get people that buy into what's happening, the story becomes really authentic.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference between the community around gaming, is that people aren't trying to, yes, we have cosplay and we're dressing up and we've got handles that depict who we are, but we're still authentic humans. We still want to be reached on an authentic level. And I think when the story becomes authentic, that becomes true. I think what traditional broadcasters are doing today is they're commentating it. They're very much narrating a script almost of, oh, and then this guy is going to shoot that guy. Whereas Red Eye gets really involved. He's like, he's one of the guys.
I think what's also interesting though is if you look at that, so it's what you said about the local guys, just they just commentate it, is what they forget is that for so long, they look at what happens overseas. So now you've got a stadium with 20,000 people and it looks this particular way, it looks like a normal, like a TV broadcast. But actually what you forget is that for years building up to that, these guys, the Red Eyes of the world, it was him and his mates, and they were at home trying to tell their friends the story online, and they were invested in that, and they were building that story and telling that story. And the reason 20,000 people sit in a stadium now and watch them is not just for the players and the games, it's for those stories as well, that they want to follow these guys and as they build. And I think that that's where they miss the mark a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
So guys, I'm going to put it out there. I know there's a couple of people in the audience. If you do have any questions and you do want to throw it forward and get a feeling of, you always thought, well, what is gaming going to look like in 30 years or something like that, please put your hand up. And we do have a mic going around. Bev, we've got someone over there. We'll take a quick question.
Well, I...
Nice. That loud. Good voice.
Surprise.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying about how gaming has developed technology and all that. But the thing is, you can also look at it as a double-edged blade. Because now, for example, let's say, as you said, with the whole VR story, love the idea, all that. But now let's say you take a 12-year-old child, that who's stopping him from buying, let's say, Call of Duty? He's not mentally prepared for all this, oh crap, I just shot someone, oh this and that.
Does it feel
how will that now affect? Because as technology grows, let's take Battlefield 1. It's becoming more realistic. Now you're actually in the war. Mm. Now, how that affects the poor child, how do you stop or prevent that point where he says, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap. There's anything, for example, now he's sleeping in bed, all of a sudden a truck drives past his house, backfire maybe, bang, oh shit, fuck, runs out of the room, starts crying, hits something. What's stopping that? Because technology has been great, like you said, brings the community together. But also on the other point, the community has also built the whole elitist and then the casuals. Like, you can see it's in CSGO, Dota, League, and many games, you will always find, just look anywhere on the internet, the toxicity levels of certain ones and certain not. How will you also improve that? Because if you can also complete that, that will also, in my opinion, I believe will also grow the South African community a lot better. Because now, let's say I have got a MR ranking Dota of 10 million, whatever, unrealistic. Now, this guy that's trying to learn something new starts playing, you bash his head in because, what the fuck are you doing? You noob, do this, do this, do this. How will he now feel about, I don't want to play this anymore? But that's also another thing we're also trying to push out. How will you affect those two questions?
Sir, that's yours.
I'm going to answer both. One, how do you stop your kid from getting upset about VR and that real life experience? Well, if you're a parent, you should probably not let your 11-year-old play Call of Duty in a VR experience.
They do have age restrictions on them.
They have age restrictions on them. I think that what's going to happen, and this is important, is that parents are going to have to get more involved. They're going to have to educate themselves on games. Yeah. And I think it does come down to parents having to pay a bit more attention to what their kids are doing online. That's the only way to solve that, which doesn't really answer your question. I mean, I'm just passing the blame on someone
else.
That's
the thing. Is a R18 movie the responsibility of the movie makers to control the children that watch it, or is it the parents at home to control that?
My dad used to let me watch Star Trek when I was like 7, and I had no clue what I was watching. So, I mean, to be honest, like, I think it's the parents. I loved it, and I think I grew up just fine. But I understand what you're saying. So I think parents have to decide what they want to let their child have access to, and that's going to come down to them. The tech can't slow down to try and stop that. That's something that parents are going to have to do.
Yeah, as a parent, I agree.
Hold on, we've lost the microphone?
Wait, let's just answer the second question.
I understand what you're saying, but it was more of example. I'm talking about the broader spectrum. Let's say now, for example, I am now 24. Now I can buy Call of Duty, which is age restriction 18. But the problem is now, let's say I've played now all of every Call of Duty, great, everything. But now, since it's only on the screen, now all of a sudden I'm immersed in it. I'm not ready for that. How do you prepare the guy from saying, oh shit, exactly like then he becomes that mentality of a small child of saying, oh crap, something scary, what's happening now? I only use the example of the small child because I know I've seen it happen many times where the parents are too soft on the children. It's like, mommy, I want that game. Then the store counter will say, I can't sell it to you. But the problem is the parents will buy it for them. I understand that we can't fix that. But the problem is like the technology, since it's rapidly increasing, great. But the problem also, we have to also condition out the mind also of the people. Because if you suddenly just jump into a water and you've never learned to swim at any age, there's going to be sudden shock. What you're going to do?
Okay. Cool. So the second question we had as well. Do you want to have a go at that? Which was around the
esports community in South Africa is toxic as hell. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to just say it. It is elitist. It's toxic. I think that the top level guys are sometimes dicks. I've told them this millions of times before. But and there is a divide between casual and high end. And I think that's the very reason why a lot of the casual gamers don't watch the top level guys, because they're rude in game, they're difficult.
The egos are bigger.
Those conversations are happening behind the scenes. People are trying, and it's an education thing as well. It is sportsmanship. Right. And I just don't think that anyone's ever sat down with a 16-year-old who's really, really good at a game and been like, you're actually a leader in the community, and you need to behave in a certain way. No one's had that conversation with them. It is happening behind the scenes. The MGOs are getting more involved. They're working on trying to improve that. A lot of the big teams are trying to start doing training camps with casual gamers, get more involved. It's going to take a long time to fix. The problem is there. I think that the leaders in the esports community are aware of it and they're trying to change it. And there is stuff on the way that will change it. There's casual gaming competitions that are going to come into play. There's some tournaments that are going to be announced soon that are going to make all the difference. But it's a process and it takes time. But I agree with you that there is a problem there. I think that the scene is aware of it and now we just need to fix it.
I heard a story about one of the national South Korean gaming team. I mean, they've got dietitians, they've got psychologists, they've got guys that actually work with them to say, let's make sure you're the best you can be. Like they were actual sportsmen, athletes. They are athletes. But they are held in such high esteem in a good way that the local soccer team or the national soccer team was feeling down one day. So they got visited by the e-gaming team and they were like, you guys are the best. And like the e-gaming team were the heroes to the national soccer team. And the soccer guys are going, oh my God, this is amazing. And like there is a healthy way of getting that done. I mean, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be guys in the higher echelons. We should be praising guys that are really doing really, really well. I mean, we have that in sports today. So it shouldn't be any different in esports. But it's got to be done in a way that it's got to be more inclusive, I think, is the thing. People have got to realize that they too can become a part of that. And I think that's where we're learning.
And I think that's where your revenues come, right? The more inclusive, the more you broaden it, the greater your reach, the more the revenue. And I think it's definitely a maturity thing, Mike.
Yeah, no. Sorry, is there another question in the audience there? Yes, sorry.
Hello. My question is, how do you see these types of technologies, especially the VR and the AR conferencing, that kind of on-the-spot immersiveness, how is that going to affect people's ability to imagine? I mean, I'm at this con. There's not a lot of people at the role-playing pen and paper because everything's given to you. Everything is delivered to you straight up. Where's your imagination going to go?
No, that's fascinating. Yeah. I've never thought of it.
No, you should answer that because now I'm quite sad.
Yeah. I mean, look, so you actually have raised the point, like, where's technology going to the point where it's going to be so real. How do you know if you're in reality or actually in the experience, right? And
okay, so
how do you create, do you encourage someone to create more and to imagine and to think bigger than what they're
experiencing? I did hear someone on a talk, I can't quote them, but I did hear a talk recently where they're saying nothing will actually kill imagination. That's what's wild about us being human, is that we actually naturally have an imagination in us. That's one of the big differences between this automated artificial intelligent world and us. We can still create, we can still make music, we can still do something against a plan, and it'll be imagination. So whether, I mean, it's all hypothetical discussion, but it's a good point. Can VR kill imagination?
Well, I don't
think it can.
Think about the Google Draw sketch environment where it's bringing this 3D element into artwork, right? And it's just blowing people's minds away. That you can flip between colors and everything.
Yeah, if we look at drawing, just taking the drawing.
Yeah.
If I give my 3-year-old child a color by numbers book, that's killing their imagination. So the question is a far more complex question that you're actually asking. And the critical thing that comes down to imagination is to train your ability to imagine. And it's like all things in life. If we don't use it, you will lose it. If you use it, you will develop the strength and muscle.
I also think if you step into a virtual world, sometimes it'll just open that imagination up because it allows you to just think so much bigger than where you possibly were and give you an experience that makes you think so much more. So, I mean, there's pros and cons.
There was a thing about virtual reality being a tool used for getting people into spaces and places that maybe they wouldn't be able to get into. So it's very difficult to imagine a space you've never been. The only thing you can do is imagine. But now you can actually start, you can broaden your imagination by saying, well, now I've seen what it's like inside there or in the backline of the NFL game. I know what it's like to be in that game. But now I can broaden my imagination to maybe more things that I would have had access to without VR. So it's a great question. I think it's going to drive, it's a rotating question. It's going to be about the evolution of how we use the technology. Yeah.
So ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for all the people in the audience and Icon for having us at Futurology. We want to get a final thought. Sam, your view, your last final thought on kind of where you're excited about where the gaming world is going.
I'm really excited about virtual reality because it means that I never have to leave my house and deal with people.
Mike,
winning.
Sales will increase.
Well, my final thought is lovely to have actually met you. I don't know if I'll ever see you again after that comment. So thank you. It's been fantastic. Thanks.
We look forward to having you on the show again. Yeah. I think there's definitely so much stuff.
Thank you.
And I mean, we've only scratched the surface of what's happening with technology and gaming.
Is that true?
I think it might be a virtual reality chicken.
Yeah,
the Oriental turkey is calling.
The X-Men over there is chasing his imaginary chicken.
But, so we're going into things where heads-up displays are being used in military and not even in military, with cognitive recognition being available with AI and cameras being used in industrial spaces. So love to have you on a show where we talk more about how gaming really has driven that type of technology. Yeah. But Brett, wrap it up.
So absolutely fantastic show. Thank you very much for being part of the audience today. It truly is going to be redefining our future in technology even further. And I think we're living through exciting times. Please follow us on at Futurology Show. If you're listening and you're podcasting, give us a 5-star rating. And till next time, thank you very much.
This is CliffCentral.com.